Thanks for listening to the best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
I don't know if we learned very much about the Patriots last night as they got to 6-0, except for the fact that I don't really see any way imaginable that the Patriots are not going to have home field advantage this year in the NFL playoffs as long as Tom Brady stays healthy. Because this defense is just so incredibly stout. I mean, it feels like cheating to get to play Tom Brady and your defense post 14 points like the New England Patriots did last night. They blocked a punt for a touchdown, and they scored on a return, an interception return or fumble slash interception return, however you want to classify that, for another touchdown. And by the way, I had the under on this game, and when there are 21 non-offensive points scored, That's a tough bad beat here. I had 42.5, and there were the Giants also scooped and scored on a Tom Brady fumble. So there are 21 defensive or special teams touchdowns in this game. There's no way that game should have gone over 42.5 based on what we actually saw. But the crazy thing to me is if you look at the Patriots' schedule, they still haven't played anybody at all. So that's wild in and of itself. But, okay, the Patriots go on the road against the Jets on Monday night. I know Sam Darnold's back from mono, but this is kind of their schedule going forward. The Browns come on the road against the Patriots. So that's 7-0, that's 8-0. And then the Patriots go on the road against the Ravens. I feel like that's a total mismatch. Bill Belichick against Lamar Jackson. That's 9-0. Then the first game that they could actually lose, in my opinion, is the Patriots on the road against the Eagles. There's a legitimate argument that this year's Patriots team has the possibility. But you even look at their schedule. I don't know how many games they'll be an underdog in for the entire season. I mean, it's crazy how easy this schedule is combined with the fact that the Patriots are defensively on the level of the 85 Bears and the 2000 Baltimore Ravens. They gave up one touchdown, really, last night. I know they got the scoop and score, but that's on the Patriot offense. Tom Brady for holding on the ball too long there, getting hit and fumbling. But the Giants hit the 64-yard touchdown to Golden Tate, which was a juggling touchdown that I don't think happens very many times out of 100. And they've given up three real offensive touchdowns to the other team in six games. The Redskins scored one, the Bills scored one, and now the Giants have scored one. Now, the way the data works, if you give up defensive or special teams touchdowns, which seems like a big flaw, then that counts against your defensive totals. But the Patriots have played six games, and they've given up three total touchdowns. And Daniel Jones, he wasn't ready for Bill Belichick. Young quarterbacks typically are not. So the fact that the Patriots won and covered was not a particular surprise. The only surprise to me was that this thing went over the number. So the Patriots get to 6-0. The other major sporting news going on last night, the Houston Astros got the win over the Tampa Bay Rays. And so we've got Astros against Yankees in the ALCS. And then the other side, obviously, we have got the Cardinals going up against the Nats. Let me bring in the crew. We've got a loaded show for you, FYI. We've got my guy Lance Taylor in hour one. In hour two, we've got Alex Marvez. And then in hour three, Joel Klatt will join us from down in Dallas as he gets ready to call the Oklahoma and Texas game. Lots of big college football games. We'll get into that some with Lance Taylor here in the next segment. But I want to bring in my crew. What, if anything, did we learn from last night's Thursday night football game that we didn't already know coming into this game, Danny G?
Well, first of all, my power was shut off for a little while last night.
Is this the big, is this part of the PG&E thing?
Unfortunately, where I'm at, there was a fire two towns away from me. My power was shut off by Burbank Water and Power. I'm not a PG&E customer, but when we started the week by talking about this in Northern California and Central California, those power shutoffs by PG&E were because of high winds and dry weather conditions. So they're worried about power lines starting fires. And so that's why 800,000 customers had power issues throughout the week. And now Southern California is also being affected by this in Ventura County because of fires and high winds. And we are just surrounded by fires here right now in Southern California.
So you didn't watch the whole game because the power was out.
Yeah, it was interrupted, but I was able to see about three quarters worth.
It's a lot, though.
I mean,
most people didn't watch the whole game. There wasn't a lot of suspense, honestly. I mean, first of all, the Patriots got up 14-0, and I was like, all right, this game's never going to be remotely competitive. And then the 64-yard touchdown got hit quickly, and then boom, Brady gets hit, fumble, and suddenly it's tied at 14. And so you thought, oh, wow, this is kind of a kooky game. Maybe this is going to end up being somewhat interesting.
You're saying I didn't miss much in the fourth quarter.
I mean, the question is, if you're a gambler, you miss some stuff because you've had to figure out whether or not the over and the under was going to hit or the Patriots were going to cover. But really, there wasn't a great deal of suspense. I don't feel like we really learned anything that we didn't already know, except, again, the Patriots are going to have home field advantage. Now, I'm not sure this Patriot offense. We'll see what happened with Josh Gordon's knee, like how severe that injury was and how long he might be out. But I don't think the Patriot offense is very good in the grand scheme of things relative to maybe past Patriot offenses.
Yeah.
But I think this year Tom Brady has got a better defense than he might have ever had before, which means all the Patriots have to do is kind of keep the car between the center of the lines, and they're going to be, you know, have a bye, be playing in Foxborough, need to win two games, and they'll be in the Super Bowl down in Miami, which is, I think, what they're going to do. Dub, what you got for me?
Well, I'm going to take your statement a step further. I don't think it even matters if Tom Brady's playing or not with the way this defense is. I think even if he got hurt, I still think they'd get home field advantage in the playoffs. We've already seen what Belichick has done a few years back with Jimmy G and Jacoby Brissett. They went out there, they dominated, their team blew out teams. I remember the game Jacoby Brissett played against the Texans. I think they won 35-7. So I don't even think it matters if Tom Brady is even playing or not. Looking at their schedule, I think they go 13-3 at the very worst, and that's probably good enough for that number one seed in the AFC. That's how good this defense is.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of truth to that. By the way, Eddie, you are leaving. Are you leaving today?
Tonight, yes.
So what time do you leave?
10:30 at night.
So you take off at 10:30 and you're going to Australia for 2 weeks.
That's accurate, yes.
So I'm, first of all, incredibly jealous. That's you and your wife, just the two of you?
Yes.
How many places in Australia are you going to go?
Just two.
Sydney and where else is my guess?
It's pronounced Cairns, but it's spelled like Cairns. It's where you go for the Great Barrier Reef to check that out.
That's pretty incredible. So how long is this flight? Have you ever been on a flight anywhere near? It's like 17 hours from L.A. to Sydney, right?
Well, we land in Auckland, New Zealand, so that's 16 hours, and then it's like an hour and a half to Sydney from there.
So you're not going to spend any time in New Zealand at all?
An hour and a half, or whatever it is, for the transfer? Right, not long, yeah.
So what's your plan for the flight? Have you thought through this? I mean, are you going to take like a sleeping pill? Are you going to you want to watch like 10 movies? What's the plan here?
I think it's going to be a mix of sleep and watching a lot of movies. Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of tough. So you take off at 10:30 at night.
Yes.
So the idea is, in an ideal world, you fall asleep and you wake up and, you know, whatever, you're over halfway would be the ideal situation. Can you fall asleep on a plane?
I can, usually, yes. I'm hoping that continues.
That's a big advantage.
And my wife has like some melatonin or something she's going to bring? I don't know.
My wife does that melatonin stuff. It doesn't work for me. The last time I went on an overnight flight, I took like four of those melatonin packets or whatever it is. It has no impact. I can't sleep on planes. I don't know what it is. I got to be laid like on my back in order to fall asleep, or, you know, on my stomach or something like that. So this is awful. All the time trying to fall asleep in an airplane is miserable. So what about the are you guys in coach?
in between. It's not quite the...
Because that's tiny, right? For 17 hours or
yeah,
whatever it is.
And we're also in... We're in the back row. It's just two seats. So there's like extra leg room, I'm being told.
No, that's not bad.
Yeah.
So that you've never been to Australia before, though?
No. Not that, the last time... I mean, when I met you in England last year, that's the first time I'd ever been out of the country. So, but yeah, we had such a great time. I'm like, we got to start seeing the world a little bit if we can.
So how much exposure will you have to animals? Obviously the Great Barrier Reef, you could get eaten by a shark.
Well, thank you for that.
Do you give us permission to spend a lot of time talking about you if you get killed by an animal in Australia?
You can do whatever you want. I'm
and
dead.
Not
in,
not in like a, like you're not gonna be like oh you're like I mean that's pretty good content
could
for
we
us.
Rename the Animal Thunderdome in your honor, Eddie?
I would like that actually if you did. Yeah,
the Eddie Garcia Memorial sharks around the Great Barrier Reef, I think, and also saltwater crocodiles.
We've been told the jellyfish is the thing to look out for when we're at the Great Barrier Reef.
Well, that doesn't sound like something you can die from.
I hope not, but yeah.
But you also, they have all the poisonous snakes. So the Great Barrier Reef, you're in danger. Are you going to see any crocodiles or any like in the outback, Australian outback?
We're only planning on seeing the old koala and the kangaroo, but you never know. Nature has its own ideas.
Even the kangaroo you can fight.
Yeah, I'm going to protect the jewels when we
meet
the kangaroo. I've heard they like to kick, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, they try to take your balls out. Smart move by the kangaroo. I mean, those things are feisty. So here's the question. Will you pay? You're going during football season. Will you pay attention to any sporting news while you're over there? Will you be able to watch any of the games? Have you contemplated any of this?
Well, we were able to watch games on my laptop in Europe. I assume we'll be able to do the same in Australia. And as a matter of fact, this is I'm not sure how I feel about this, but my wife planned this whole trip, and she's really good at it. I've told her she should be a travel agent if she wanted to do that, but she unfortunately made a mistake, and while my favorite football team, the Steelers, will be 20 minutes from my home, I will be on the other side of the world. We're not going to be at the Chargers-Steelers game.
Oh, yeah, that's pretty wild.
On Monday. So we've already seen the Australian time. I think it's going to be on because it's the Monday. It's our Sunday night game for some reason.
Yeah.
It's going to be like at 11 a.m. in Australia. So we're going to try and plan and watch it.
You're going to miss the Samford quarterback.
Yeah, I know. That's the thing. The third string quarterback's playing. So maybe I'm not going to miss anything.
I think we're on a bunch of places in Australia and New Zealand, like the Fox Sports Radio is. And our show, because there are a lot of, remember we have Australian people, Danny G, who regularly and New Zealand.
Oh yeah, we get tweets regularly from Australia and New Zealand. Yeah, and New Zealand.
I'd like to go sometime. I've never been, but what would the odds be that you get into a cab and what do you know? There's boom, Fox Sports Radio.
That would be something. I will
low chance, but I don't know if you're listening to us in Australia right now. Send me a Twitter message at Clay Travis and let us know where you're on, or New Zealand, because I do feel like we're on there. All right, but all that is awesome. Did you learn anything last night from the game?
Well, I mean, I don't know if I learned anything, but you know, the takeaway for me was Tom Brady can have a C-level game and the Patriots can still win. I know it was the Giants. They're not very good, but the defense obviously is very good, and you know, they always find a way to you know, block punt for a touchdown and whatnot. So bad news for the rest of the league. Even if the Patriots aren't playing their best, they still seem to find ways to win games.
Yeah, and by the way, we didn't learn anything, I don't think, from the Astros win over the Rays either. Roberto, any takeaway from last night's game?
No, I really didn't watch the game. I was trying not to watch any sports yesterday. Still,
you're still reeling,
yeah, still reeling from that.
So, what did you watch instead?
Breaking Bad, Better Call Saul. Getting ready for that El Camino.
That new Breaking Bad movie comes out today.
Yeah,
right?
Comes out today. Yeah, that's right. Getting ready for El Camino.
Came out at midnight.
Came out at midnight, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm curious. I'd like to watch that at some point. I don't know. I mean, I haven't. If you watched, is The Irishman out too now on Netflix?
Not
it hasn't
yet.
Been officially released.
No, not yet.
Yeah, I'll watch the El Camino movie for sure for Breaking Bad. But I knew that it was coming out today.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
It's time for Animal Thunderdome.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I'm just glad I was there.
Boys and girls.
I thought he thought I was like this ginormous piece of chicken.
Dying time's here.
I have a boa constrictor stuck to my face.
Sam, you have a what?
This is Animal Thunderdome.
All right, Danny G, what you got for me?
All right, let's start in Georgia, where wildlife officials are warning about an invasive fish species.
I saw this headline. That's not this. I don't know how this happened, but we got to kill this thing.
Yeah, did you see the pictures of this?
Yeah, I did.
The northern snakehead. Yeah, they're bad news. And for the first time, this fish has been confirmed in Georgia waters. The department said northern snakeheads have the potential to impact native species by competing for food and habitat. They're asking for you to do five things if you're in Georgia and you catch one. One, do not release it. Two, kill it immediately and freeze it. They can survive on land. Three, if possible, take pictures of the fish, close-ups of its mouth, fins, and tail. Four, note where it's caught, like the water body landmarks or GPS coordinates. And five, immediately report it to your regional Georgia DNR Wildlife Resource Center. Tons of teeth. It looks evil from the front.
It looks evil, and it can walk on the ground.
Yeah,
right?
And it breathes without being in the water, which has scared a lot of people, and that's why the picture and article has been
making its rounds.
That's
kind of a big deal for the fish to not have to swim, not have to breathe underwater.
Have never heard of anything
like
that.
Seems like an unfair evolutionary advantage.
Yeah. So please, if you find a northern snakehead in the state of Georgia, kill it and then freeze it.
Yeah. I don't even want to see this picture. I mean, that's nightmare
yes.
fuel for sure.
I will tweet it out at Danny G Radio and at Clay Travis on Twitter. Okay, this next story. If you park your car outside, you might want to check under the hood every once in a while. The squirrels around Holly and Chris Persick's home were stocking up for the winter by taking walnuts from their yard in Pittsburgh and shoving them under the hood of their car. Holly was driving her car this past Monday. She thought something smelled weird, so she pulled over, popped the hood. She found more than 200 walnuts and tons of grass, and the walnuts were on fire.
Oh, no.
Yeah. They were everywhere, under the battery, near the radiator fan, her husband said.
So the squirrels were thinking they were going to live in the car?
I guess so. The walnuts on the engine block were black. They had roasted. So, yeah, they told CNN that they had taken the car in for an inspection a month ago, but they hadn't looked under the hood since. I mean, how many of us pop our hood on a regular basis?
That's pretty wild.
Yeah, so this article is saying if you park your car outside, especially on grass, you need to check under the hood every once in a while because this is not uncommon, it says, for squirrels to think that may be somewhere where they can nest.
Tough break.
Yeah.
What
and maybe when it gets cold, because when the car's sitting there, after you turn it off, it's warm. I don't know.
That's not a bad theory. I mean, by the way, I can't believe we don't have any Australia Animal Thunderdome since Eddie's going to be there for the next 2 weeks.
He's got a long flight to worry about. I didn't want to scare him even more.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm thinking he might die at the Great Barrier Reef. I don't want to jinx the vacation. Do you think that your wife would cut the vacation short and, like, come back if you died at the Great Barrier Reef, Eddie?
I think so.
I mean, it's a long trip.
Yeah. We did get... what is it, trip insurance? And she was telling me all about, like, you know,
your remains,
you know, they'll bring our remains back and all this kind of stuff. I'm like, oh, that's great. That sounds great.
I don't know. It's just a long flight. I mean, if they're like, I mean, you just turn around and fly back with the body. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either.
Part of me would be tempted to just go ahead and say, you probably want to come back. But I mean, it is a long flight back with your body.
What did somebody tell you, Eddie, to be careful when you go to the bathroom?
Oh, yeah. My nephew, who's been to Australia, said, like, kick the toilet, like, rattle.
Oh, snakes.
Rattle. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Snakes and spiders.
Oh, perfect segue. Last story here from San Jose, California. All right, Clay, you've done pretty well in your career. You don't need to steal anything. But if you were a thief, this would be a really bad move, especially for you. So this California reptile lover says thieves who made off with his duffel bag probably thought that they were getting away with some loot, but instead it was a bag full of snakes.
Good Lord.
Yeah, so this guy, he runs a business called For Goodness Snakes, and he was at Martin Luther King Library in downtown San Jose giving a presentation. When he went out to put the things back in his, you know...
Wait, he brought all these snakes to the library?
Yes.
And to be like, hey, here are snakes.
Right. So then he goes to his car, to the parking garage, to load the creatures back in. So he left a bag, a couple things there. He goes in, comes back out. The duffel bag's gone. Well, it had three pythons and an exotic lizard inside of it.
So somebody's going to open it up thinking they're going to get so much. I mean,
yeah.
What do you think they do?
A thief ran off with his duffel bag thinking, yes, you know, jacked somebody. Open it up and three pythons are inside the bag.
What do you think they do?
Well, It's interesting because it says that one of the snakes and the lizard were found in a dumpster, but the other snakes are still missing. So the police are on lookout there in the San Jose area.
So do they think that the snakes got away out of the dumpster, or do they think that the thief kept them?
They're not sure.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
you think if he dumped one snake and
the lizard,
he
would dump it all, right?
Yeah, you wouldn't think that he would be like, oh, I like these two snakes. I'm going to keep these.
So you're saying two are on the loose right now.
That's what I'm thinking. Not to make people in San Jose, California nervous, but I would think that there are definitely two snakes, probably massive, that want to eat people loose all over San Jose.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Do we have a hypocrisy bell? Steve Kerr earlier this week was asked about his opinion on Hong Kong and the China protests as the NBA has been caught in a mess all week long. Here was Steve Kerr when he was asked about his opinion on the protesters in Hong Kong.
It's a really, really bizarre international story, and a lot of us don't know what to make of it. So it's something I'm reading about, just like everybody is, but I'm not going to comment further.
So Steve Kerr basically saying, like, I don't really know what's going on in Hong Kong. How would you expect me to have an opinion on that? It's outside the country. Problem. Last month, Steve Kerr, on his Twitter account, tweeted support for the Hong Kong protesters, retweeted, said the authoritarian trend is not inevitable. Fight back. It will work. So Steve Kerr now caught in a lie. Either he unintentionally retweeted encouragement to the Hong Kong protesters to fight back against China a month ago when he knew more, evidently, about the Hong Kong protest than he does now, or he's completely caught in a lie. Does this surprise anyone that Steve Kerr, given how bad that answer was that we just played for you, Golden State Warrior coach, trying to avoid commenting on a political issue when he comments on political issues all the time, has actually, in the last few weeks, been retweeting and commenting on the Hong Kong protesters?
Why be so fake, man? Just be real. Like, he's not. If he comments on China, he's not going to lose his job. I mean, just...
No, but I think the reason why he is afraid to comment on China is because of the money that the NBA will lose. I mean, I think that, again, this is a clear example of taking money in exchange for shutting up. They shut up and dribble in China. Because, and I think this is directly tied to the economics of the NBA, which is the NBA has not been growing, despite what you read. It's down about 50% off of its highs back when Jordan was playing. And so the league has decided they need to grow overseas, and China is a huge market, and they're hoping to make all that money. But this is pretty ridiculous, right? I just tweeted this out. Steve Kerr has effectively been caught in a lie here about his opinion. I agree. I mean, like, he's entitled to give his opinion. But the dude gives his opinion on everything immediately, and here he is caught actually agreeing with the Hong Kong protesters and saying he hasn't made a decision, that it's bizarre, it's too complicated, it's messy. He couldn't otherwise find a reason to have an opinion. So this in and of itself is pretty intriguing. Anybody surprised that Steve Kerr was lying when he said that the situation was too complex and he couldn't make a decision? Danny G, you surprised?
No.
Dub, you surprised?
I mean, it kind of sounds like I sounded in high school when I would come home drunk, and my mom would ask me, have you been drinking? And I was like, I'd be like, you know, Mom, I just don't have enough information to tell you these answers. I mean, that's kind of the vibe I got from that answer.
Yeah. Eddie Garcia, you surprised that Steve Kerr now caught in a lie? A few weeks ago, he had a strong opinion on Hong Kong, and now it's too complex. He doesn't really understand. It's messy. It's bizarre.
I'm amused is what I am. I don't know if surprised is the word, but very amused.
Roberto, is that a good analogy?
It was something like me when I got caught smelling like weed and coming home.
I don't know how that happened.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I know. That must have been some.
I don't know, Mom. It's not me. It's you.
You didn't have any brute cologne in the car?
No, man.
It's cool.
It was a rainy day outside.
Yeah, rainy day.
no canoe cologne.
All right. So that is out there. If you want to go see Steve Kerr's actual opinion, let's play that one more time. Steve Kerr retweets. Hong Kong rising, the authoritarian trend is not inevitable. Fight back. It will work. So he's encouraging the Hong Kong protesters to fight back against authoritarian governments such as the one in China. That is, let's see, on September 17th of 2019, Steve Kerr retweets that. But when he's asked this week what he thinks about the Hong Kong protest, this is what he said.
It's a really, really bizarre international story, and a lot of us don't know what to make of it. So it's something I'm reading about, and just like everybody is, but I'm not going to comment further.
Yeah. All right, Steve. Thanks. I don't know how the weed got in my car, officer. I don't. What do you mean drinking? What do you mean I smell like alcohol? No, I haven't had any alcohol. Proceeds to fail the sobriety test on the side of the road. All right, so that's what's going on there. I'd said we would do our draft. I told you already that I would take the LSU Florida game, the Gators going on the road against LSU. If I could only watch one game this weekend, that is the one that I would pick. Danny G, I'm troubled to ask you because last week you said
week I picked one of the best games that happened.
Right. Good
job, Danny G.
Like, with your first round pick, you went out and basically took.
Yeah,
Ryan
I only took a game that some of the analysts on TV later said was the best game all Sunday.
All right, so you picked the Raiders game against the Bears last
in
week
London
as your number one pick.
Good job,
Danny
G.
Your number one pick this week.
Yeah, I'm gonna slide over to the NFC this week. How about the NFC West hopefuls taking on the NFC champs, Niners at Rams on Fox, Clay? It's on Fox.
That's a good game.
San Francisco coming off a big primetime win over Cleveland, as you know, and the Rams are coming off of back-to-back losses to the Bucs and Seahawks. Now, the Rams have never lost three straight games in the McVay era, so this would be a big deal if they drop this. Can they run the ball finally? Will Bosa get to Goff the way he did to Mayfield? And will Goff throw interceptions and then blame him on the high winds here in Southern California?
Yeah, we'll see exactly what's going on there. That's a good pick. I ridiculed your first round television viewing pick last weekend. Even though it turned out to be a good game, you made a bad pick. Sometimes that happens. This is a good pick. I like this pick. This is solid. Dub, you can only take one. You can only draft one game going into the weekend. Which one are you taking?
Redskins, Dolphins.
Is that real? Because no. You just want to know no. Who's going to have the. I actually,
it is an important game because I saw odds on this. The winner of this game is now going to be a -400 favorite to get the number one pick in next year's draft.
So it's
the Tua Bowl.
Yeah, it is. I actually find it a little bit intriguing. I mean, because if you are a Redskins fan or you're a Dolphins fan, I would want to have that number one overall pick. And by the way, if I'm Dwayne Haskins, I'm like, I've never wanted my team to win a game more because he doesn't want to get Josh Rosen, right? I mean, if in all honesty, if the Redskins have the number one overall pick and Tua is out there, I don't know how you pass on Tua. I think we could have a similar situation to what we had last year, which is you have a first-round quarterback like the Arizona Cardinals did with Josh Rosen. And you've got Dwayne Haskins sitting there who may be okay one day. We don't know. But if you've got Tua, who you feel like is a surefire, and there's no real such thing as a surefire, but as close to a surefire outstanding option as you can get, if you've got him sitting out there, how do you pass on Tua? So if the Redskins lose to the Dolphins, then I could see that being a really pretty intriguing game to watch. I also am legitimately wondering, are both these teams going to try and tank? I mean, are they going to play crappy or are they going balls to the wall to try to win? It sounds paradoxically ridiculous to pick a matchup between two awful beaten teams. They haven't won a game yet, but I actually am kind of intrigued to see what happens here.
Yeah, no doubt. But for my actual pick, I'm going to go Texans Chiefs because
that's
we heard back earlier in the season when the Ravens played the Chiefs, this could be the next Tom Brady,
which was
Manning
so ridiculous. Even the biggest Lamar Jackson stands on the planet now are starting to come around to my position of Lamar Jackson somewhere around the 20th best quarterback in the NFL, right? Ever since, I know he came out and he looked awesome against the Dolphins and he looked good against the Cardinals, but the last 3 weeks he's come back down to earth. He had three interceptions against the Steelers. 20 might be too high for Lamar Jackson, but you're right. Now the new Brady versus Manning is they got their Brady or their Manning, whichever one you want to say, with Patrick Mahomes already. They keep looking for the young gunslinging rival, and now the new one is Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And I think this could be an absolute shootout. This is a high total, 55 points. The Chiefs' defense, not very good. And the Texans coming off an absolute walloping of the Falcons where they put up 50-plus points themselves. So this could be a fun game to watch, no doubt.
Love that pick, too. And by the way, do you think Chicago Bears fans just watch this game crying quietly to themselves because they traded up to get Mitch Trubisky when Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes were both on the board that they could have taken with their regular pick?
I mean, if I was a huge Chicago Bears fan, I think it would be the first thing I think about every morning I wake up and the last thing I think about before I go to bed, because this game, you're right, it's got to kill Chicago Bears fans across the country to watch this game thinking, oh my God, we traded up in that draft. These guys were picked behind Mitch Trubisky.
Yeah, I don't know what the impact would be, but it's got to be tough to be a Bears fan right now and have Mitch Trubisky. Even Mitch Trubisky's got to be like, what the hell were the Bears thinking? All right, Eddie Garcia, you're about to go to Australia. Let's pretend that you have the ability to watch games. You have a number one draft pick to make. Who would you draft?
I think it says we've got a pretty good football weekend when all of us are picking different games, and I'm a sucker for a college football rivalry, so I will take Texas-Oklahoma.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Over LSU and Florida. Now, the Gators proved me wrong last week, but I do think LSU is going to handle Florida this week. So, yeah, I'm going OU Texas.
So on this 17-hour flight, by the way, you take off at 10:30 at night tonight in L.A., and then you land evidently in Auckland and then continue. But what time do you actually land? Is it Sunday morning? I can't even – I mean, is it already Monday? Like, what day are you actually landing in Australia?
I believe it will be Sunday morning at like 7 a.m.
7 a.m. Sunday morning.
Yeah.
So your entire Saturday – in some way will be spent
gone.
It just disappears.
it's so weird. Yes.
So you will be in. You will take off on the air on Friday, and it will be Sunday morning when you land.
I believe that is correct. Yes.
Oh, that's so weird. That is. I've never taken a flight that long, but I mean the going across all those time zones and everything else. I'm curious when you get back from Australia, if you're just waking up. Eddie Garcia is headed to Australia 10:30. I'm curious how long it takes you when you are in Australia to kind of get your footing and feel like a normal human again, right? Because of all the time zones. Because I would like to go, but I think you have to go for at least 2 weeks if you go to Australia or New Zealand, or else it's just you're in too much of a wacky space. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I'll give you a report how it goes when I get back. But I have a friend who's gone twice, and I asked him, how do you deal with the travel? And I loved his answer. He said, just suck it up.
Yeah. Like,
just suck it up. There's nothing you can do about it. Just don't stress about it. Just handle it as best you can. So that's
I want to take my kids, but my kids are so young, I feel like that would be even tougher on them, and you would almost need to be gone for longer than 2 weeks. Does that make sense? Like, 2 weeks I know is a long vacation, but I just feel like if you're going to take young kids to Australia, I'd be curious if people have done that, how that worked. Because we've taken our kids to Europe, like you saw. We took them to the Titans Chargers game in London, and they did pretty well on that flight. But that's half as long, and I just don't know how long it takes for your body to bounce back. And if you're a parent and you got young kids with you, I wonder how long it takes you to bounce back, because it's not just you that you're responsible for. All right, Roberto, what game are you drafting for the weekend?
I'm going to go with Danny G, the 49ers and the Rams. You got the 49ers defense and Bosa going up against the Rams and their struggling offense. And it's interesting to see if the 49ers are for real. They've had an easy schedule so far. And the Rams got to win this game, man. If the Rams don't win, they're going to be three games back. So it's a big game for the Rams, man.
Should be indeed. Appreciate all you going with your draft pick.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Welcome back, Geico Outkick Studios. Appreciate all of you spending your morning with us. Eddie Garcia is about to take off for Australia, but before he takes off from Australia, he's going to give us the final update. No pressure on you, Eddie. I don't want you to screw up. Can you manage to do it?
Well, we'll find out.
Good stuff as always, and Godspeed. Have fun going to Australia. How much do you pack to go to Australia? Like, do you guys, are you going to use the laundromat at some point, or are you packing 2 weeks' worth of clothes?
Well, I think my wife is packing 2 months' worth of clothes.
Yeah, no kidding.
We do have a washer and dryer at the Airbnb we're staying at.
What's the weather going to be down there? Because it's what time of year? It's like what?
It's spring.
Yeah, spring.
In Sydney, it's going to be in the mid-60s. And in Cairns, it's going to be in the high 70s to 80s. So.
Okay. So not that much different in general than what you guys might be used to in L.A.
True.
All right. Well, have fun.
Thank you.
And
thank you.
curious when you get back in 2 weeks to hear all about it. And if you decide that you want to call in, you're welcome to call in the show at any point and tell us if you nearly die. Or
If I survive the spiders and the snakes, I will. And the sharks, I'll have a full report for
you. But just for the record, if you are killed by an animal in Australia, we're able to talk about it. Like, you're not going to hold us accountable for it.
I absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Good deal. Have a good time.
Thanks.
That is Eddie Garcia, who is off to Australia for 2 weeks. People who work on this show have better vacations than I do. I don't know how this is possible, but Eddie just bailing in the middle of football season for 2 weeks, he gets to go to Australia.
Having one Monday morning off. You didn't say one word about Eddie being gone for 2 weeks.
Well, it's true. I gave him a pass because I'm jealous of what he's going to get to do. I gave you a hard time for taking Monday off because you were taking Monday off despite doing the exact same thing as me. You went to an early afternoon wedding
for
Jason Martin.
But I was out of town tourist. I needed to go to Broadway and check things out.
Yeah.
I was investigating. It was market research.
I meanwhile, was back ready to roll. What's the deal with Joel Klatt?
Yeah, Joel's ready, and he said he's still scarred from seeing you shirtless on Lock It
In. Did you see that? Did you see me topless?
I tried to unsee it, and I couldn't.
I'm sorry that sometimes people just need to bring sex appeal to television. I mean, it's not a surprise. The Baywatch girls, I mean, that's why Baywatch was so popular.
Anti-sex appeal. Yeah. That was anti-sex appeal.
How about the fact that they just grab pictures of me on video because they have a constantly running camera in my house and I'm walking by getting dressed, and then they just put it on national television?
That seems like a violation of some sort of constitutional right. I don't know which one. But
did we just wake you up? You sound like a husky voice, Joel Klatt.
Well, I'm a little under the weather
trying to
get over that. But I'm feeling better today than I have in the last couple of days. But yeah, that's what you're hearing, a little husky voice. Is I've got a little cold going.
So they're doing, I think, to give people an update who haven't watched the show yet, the big noon Saturday game, but they have a pregame show. They're going to be live. You guys are going to be live. I'm assuming you're going to go by and say something. I would think during the pregame show.
Yes, I will say something. I will be on. I'll be on the pregame show. They're going to do 2 hours of big noon kickoff. And so I'll be on a few times in the first hour and then a few times in the second hour. So I'll be a part of the show for about 4 segments.
So for anybody out there who is going to this game, and I imagine there'll be some people listening who are going to Oklahoma, Texas, fabulous rivalry game at the State Fairgrounds there in Dallas. It's going to be a pretty cool setup. They've done this for a couple of years in a row, but if you want to go and be on television or go experience the bedlam, you are able to roll in there, and it should be pretty cool to see.
I can't wait. This is actually my favorite game. I know. Listen, Ohio State Michigan is great, and it's an unbelievable rivalry, and I love the game. But there's something so unique about this game and the State Fair. The sights and the sounds split right down at the 50, the hatred between the two teams. I mean, it's one of those bucket list games. If you have not been to a Red River game and you are a college football fan, I think it's one that you've got to go check out. It really is. And this one in particular, did you know, how about this, Clay? If I were to ask you of the great rivalries out there, which rivalry has been played more times with both teams in the top 15. Which one would you say it was?
In all of college football?
That's right.
I would give you, if I were guessing the five games, I'm going to give you five right off the top of my head that I would think are most often going to be matchups of, you say top 15? Top 15
yes.
teams. I would think Ohio State, Michigan has to be up there. I would think Alabama.
21 times.
How many times? 21?
21 times.
I would think Alabama-Auburn has to have been top 15 battle a decent amount of times.
It's not really on the list.
All right. That's probably an indictment of Auburn more than it's an indictment of Alabama.
Yes, it is. Absolutely. It absolutely is.
This is actually a great – this is a fun kind of game for me to sit around and think about. I would think that big-time rivalry games that I think I don't want to miss – Army-Navy back in the day, I bet they were sometimes in the top 15, but they probably haven't been for 50 years, either team ranked in the top 15.
I would think
Tennessee-Alabama has probably been one where there's been a lot of top 15 matchups.
Not really on the list. you're under some recency bias here. Outside of Alabama, you know, the history of the SEC schools is not actually as strong as you would think.
Well, Tennessee's a top 10 all times wins team. So
that's true.
SC Notre Dame.
Yes.
SC Notre Dame is on that list. Let's see. I'm trying to think if there's any, you know, Florida State, even though it's really recent, I bet there were a lot of top 15 games in that one.
Close. Florida State, Miami.
Ah, yeah, I should have gotten Florida State, Miami. But that's still recent. That's all since like 1975.
Yes, but it was like every year.
Yeah, right.
For 15 years. 23 times, Red River. So this is the one that's been
played
more times than any other rivalry as a top 15 matchup, just to give you some sense of the history of this matchup. So, and it's, again, this year. And the reason I bring this up is because of how huge this game is. You know, for Texas, think about it from Texas's standpoint. This can negate that LSU loss almost,
right?
From earlier in the season, and it puts them on track to have the catbird seat for that Big 12 championship game, at least a berth in that championship game, which maybe can get them back into the playoff after that last loss to LSU. And then for Oklahoma's side, they haven't really been tested at all. Very similar to Alabama, they haven't played anybody, and so. From the standpoint of what is Oklahoma this year, I think we're going to have an answer to that on Saturday night.
Are you with me that an 11-point spread or 10.5-point spread, as this line currently is, seems insanely high? Last six years, Texas has won three of these. Oklahoma has won three of these. Texas is, I mean, this is it's a cliche, but you really can throw the record books out. But that seems wild to me.
I think it's totally wild. When I saw it, I could not believe it. Now, there are some metrics that would suggest that Texas might struggle, like their pass defense. They've got three starters out in the secondary. Their pass defense is rated 126th in the country right now. So there's some things out there, but it really doesn't matter. Heck, Charlie Strong's teams came in there and beat Oklahoma. This is a game that plays within a possession. It just does. That's what happens. So I was shocked. If I was, you know, if I was out there and I was trying to hold a ticket, let's just say that I would think that number was way too big.
So, and Tom Herman has also been fantastic as an underdog. So let's kind of look at the college football playoff picture as it is right now. If Oklahoma wins out, they are in, right? I mean, there's no point in discussing it. If Texas beats Oklahoma,
they would at worst be number three in the country, at worst.
And that's assuming that the teams above them, Clemson and Alabama, continued to win. And I know you're
with me. They would even finish higher than Clemson.
Yeah,
in the
Ohio State. You'd be Ohio State, Bama. Yeah.
Ohio State would, and Bama would be right up there, or an undefeated Georgia, or an undefeated LSU.
Right. But if Oklahoma loses, it kind of throws everything in the Big 12 into an uproar. Now, they, in theory, would play again, right? I mean, like they did last year, probably, unless somebody else sneaks in there. But if Oklahoma loses, then on Sunday morning, people wake up in the Big 12 and think what?
Oh, gosh. I think because of last year, I think they would think, well, Oklahoma now has no room for error.
Right.
And no margin for error. But I was with some of the Big 12 folks last night, actually. We had dinner here in Dallas. And we were talking about this. And I just brought up to them, I was like, listen, guys, like, it's not great for you if Oklahoma loses, because the SEC top end, with one loss teams potentially as non-division winners, is going to be really strong.
Yeah.
You could have Florida sitting there. You could have LSU or Alabama. You could have Georgia. And any one of those teams could be, in theory, Clay, 11-1, not having won their division, sitting there with their only loss being to one of those other teams. And we've seen that the committee values the SEC much higher than any other league. They want to talk themselves into SEC teams as much as it can drive me crazy at times. I mean, that's what they do. And so if Oklahoma loses, even as a champion, even if they were to avenge that loss, I think they would get in over one of those teams, but I'm not sure.
Yeah,
I'm really not sure. In particular, if it's this, imagine if it's Texas Okay, imagine if Texas is 12-1 as a Big 12 champ, and LSU specifically, Clay, yep, is 11-1 with their only loss to Alabama. Who goes?
Oh, I think it would be LSU.
I think so too, because they won the head-to-head matchup.
Yeah, but I do think the even more challenging situation for yours, let's say Oklahoma finishes 12-1 but loses this game, comes back and avenges that like they did last year in the Big 12 title game. But what if I don't think that Georgia is going to lose. Okay, I understand, you know, you look at the rest of their schedule. Could they lose to Florida? Yes, it's a big rivalry game, much like OU Texas. By the way, that's another one that I would put in there for top 15 matchups because there have been a lot of those over the years. It wouldn't stun me if they lost that game because exactly for that reason. It's a 50-50 setup. That environment in Jacksonville is phenomenal. But if Georgia does what I expect them to do and goes 12-0, then – even if they lose to Alabama, let's assume it's Alabama or it's LSU, whoever the other team is, and that other team is 12-0, I don't know how you could leave a 12-1 Georgia that loses another close game to Alabama or LSU or vice versa. I don't know how you leave them out, especially if Georgia has a win over Notre Dame and Notre Dame continues to look as good as they have so far this season. If Notre Dame goes and beats Michigan, and let's presume that they beat USC this weekend, I think Notre Dame's going to finish 11-1, and their only loss is going to be by 6 on the road in Athens. That's a pretty damn good resume, even though people like to pile on Notre Dame and say they're overrated. I think the Irish are pretty good this year.
You could, in theory, have a one-loss Big Ten East non-winner in Ohio State or Penn State.
Yeah.
This is shaping up to be – and here's the thing. I don't really think that there's a clear-cut, mark of who's really good and who's not. I genuinely believe, Clay, that we've got 10 teams, probably 11 teams that I think are really good. I think Texas could beat anybody on any given day. I think that they proved that even in a loss to LSU. I think Ohio State has looked to the best of anybody in the country. I think Georgia is damn good. I think Alabama is really good. The team that I'm I'll tell you the one that drives me nuts. Clemson.
Yeah,
they're gonna get in because their schedule is awful.
ACC is garbage. Clay,
the ACC is trash. It is absolute trash. And Clemson's gonna go undefeated and get in. And to me, they are the 2014 version of Florida State right now.
Yep,
the defending national champion that goes undefeated and gets in, and then just gonna get their doors blown off. Now, whether that happens or not, but of all the top teams, wouldn't you say that they have played by far the worst football?
If you were, and this is why Clemson fans are fired up at me, but if you were just seeding teams, I this is what I try to do when I rank teams, and I know you're trying to do it too because you have Clemson, I think, 6 in your poll. If you were just judging teams based on what they have done so far this year and how they have looked, I'm not sure Clemson is in the top 10. And that's not to say they're not talented. That's not to say that, yes, they are undefeated, but if you just look at what they've done against the opponents that they have played, Trevor Lawrence has been downright average, and that's why I like that 2014 analogy, because Jameis Winston was very average in his sophomore year after winning the Heisman Trophy and the national championship. Now, he's a redshirt sophomore, so he'd been one more year in the system than Trevor Lawrence had. But Trevor Lawrence has just been okay. And I saw a read an interesting article. I'm curious what you think about this, saying that, yes, Clemson is very talented, but at wide receiver, they have the same guy, right? Like, they don't really have that Hunter Renfro guy who's your slot receiver who's going to get open and make it more difficult to defend. They have the same big, strong, physical receiver, and they run the same routes and they do the same thing, but they don't have the same variety that they did on offense last year.
I think that that's interesting. They're 20th in scoring offense, scoring only 38 points per game. And that game against North Carolina is troublesome. They only managed 331 total yards in that game. Did you know that in the previous three games to that, North Carolina was allowing 436 yards to their three opponents? That's over 100 yards difference. You know, it's not adding up for me. And I think 6, by the way, that I have them is generous.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't have them in my top 10.
This is why this system sucks, because Clemson's not going to get tested, and they're going to go, and there's going to be some damn good football team with one loss to another damn good football team, and we're going to watch Clemson go to the playoff.
All right, you're calling OU Texas. What do you think expect to see happen in Florida on the road against LSU and in Penn State on the road against Iowa, which I would say are probably the two other games that are going to get the most eyeballs?
I think Penn State is really good. Do you know Penn State's second in the country in point differential at plus 198? They're second in the country in scoring defense, allowing just about 7.5 points per game. They are really, really good. They lead the nation 5 sacks per game. After last year, they were first. The year before that, they were third. And Sean Clifford is really good. Sean Clifford can throw the ball down the field. He's 5th in the country right now in yards per attempt to their quarterback. I like Penn State a lot after Iowa struggled in particular protecting the quarterback against Michigan. And then in that LSU-Florida game, I just don't think Florida's going to have enough juice in back-to-back weeks to rise to the level to beat another top 10 team. And I think this one is much better than the one that they played last week. So they get Auburn at home, the easier of the two. Now they've got to go on the road to maybe the most, Clay, would you say the toughest environment in the SEC?
I think LSU at night is a different caliber of carnival level excess drunkenness. And I just have been there a lot of times. And the thing I've said is I don't know how the people walk. You know, after all the alcohol that they have consumed, it's just a different level of noise at night. Yeah, I think it's probably the toughest environment that there is in the SEC. Now, obviously, the players have a lot to do with it, but it's a juiced up atmosphere.
And because of that, and because of their offense, I think it's going to be a great matchup. If LSU can protect Burrow at all, I think that they win. It wouldn't shock me if they won by double digits.
Yeah, I'm a double-digit guy in that game. Okay, so at the end of the OU-Texas game, who has had a better performance at quarterback, Sam Ellinger or Jalen Hurts?
I kind of think Sam Ellinger. I think he's underrated. I think that he is going against a defense that is still struggling with their confidence, and he's got his best wide receiver back this week, Colin Johnson. So I think Ellinger is going to have a huge day.
Good stuff. Thanks for getting up early with us. I'll send you some topless photos of myself to help get you through the rest of the weekend down there in Dallas.
I almost threw up. On live TV, I almost threw up.
Enjoy it. Go watch. That's Joel Klatt at Joel Klatt on Twitter. Go watch them. They're going to have a pretty awesome setup if you're going to be at OU Texas, or, you know, obviously flip it on the television as well. But that Texas State Fairgrounds setup in Dallas is really, really cool. He's right when he's saying it should be on your bucket list as a fan to go check it out. I feel the same way about Georgia, Florida. A lot of these neutral site, big time college football rivalry games are about as good as it gets, and it's so unique compared to anything else that goes on.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
In the world of sports.